Are you a man looking for an intensive program to help you overcome your sexually addictive behaviors? Gateway to Freedom is your answer. Gateway to Freedom is a three-day intensive workshop for men seeking to overcome sexually addictive behaviors. Whether married, single, or divorced, Gateway to Freedom will help men regain hope for a new life of purity and real contentment. The workshop is conducted by experts in the field of sexual addiction recovery. Your experts have over 35 years of combined experience. Read testimonials of workshop alumni at gatewaymen.com. Get all the info and register online at gatewaymen.com or call 1-800-49-PURITY.
Hi, my name is Jonathan, and I'm the founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop. I want to personally invite you to be part of our next intensive coming up May 3rd through the 5th. So call us today at 1-800-49-PURITY or visit us online at gatewaymen.com.
Welcome to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Are you ready to get real and start living each day in purity? This dynamic program is designed to educate, encourage, and equip listeners with the tools necessary for living a life of sexual purity. Pure Sex Radio brings you the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real life struggles, learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction, and get serious about purity. Your hosts for Pure Sex Radio are Jonathan Doherty and Stephen Cervantes. Jonathan is the director of Be Broken Ministries and founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop for Men. Stephen is the founder of the Hope Counseling Center. Visit us online at puresexradio.com. And now, please welcome Jonathan and Stephen on Pure Sex Radio.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We're glad to have you here with us. My name is Jonathan. I'm here with Stephen. Stephen, how are you doing today?
Blessed. Thank you.
Well, good. Well, listeners, I just wanted to make mention, as we do periodically, that we are a listener-supported radio broadcast. The way that we can continue to put this broadcast out on the air and through our podcasts and all of that kind of stuff is through the generous support of listeners like you. So if you would like to learn more about the ways in which you can partner with us, which are not all financial, there's other ways that you can support us as well, simply go to give.bebroken.com and you can learn about all the ways that you can partner with us. So Stephen, we're going to jump into another radio show here, and it's going to be kind of interesting, I think, talking about maybe the issue of relevance. And so share with our listeners how you got onto this topic and maybe where we're going to go this week.
If you mean, is this going to be relevant?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what
you're
asking me?
Just as long as you don't tell any more cleavage jokes like you did in a previous broadcast.
No comment. Yeah. I deny that, you know, being part of any of that. Do you think this guy's name is Henry Nouwen? Have you heard this? That's what, okay. So I was reading this book. Somebody gave it to me, In the Name of Jesus by Henry Nouwen. And it's just a very simple book with this question about relevance. And somehow you and I are going to mesh sexual purity and relevance. You know, our listeners go, how are they going to pull this off this week? They talk about all kinds of stuff, and everything is sexual to these guys.
What do you mean, our listeners? I wonder how we're going to pull this off.
But, I mean, we'll pick a topic, and we'll talk about sex with any – pick a word, and we'll make it a sexual topic somehow. You know, it's
like, that's why I'm referred to as the sex guy at my church.
The sex guy. That's good. So I'm reading this book, and one of the ways this applies to us as sexual beings is we're supposed to work on growth. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we feel very small on the journey, and we want to be powerful and influential. And some men get distorted and think, well, the way I can be powerful is sexually. I can have a secret life, and I can do big things, and I can be influential, and I can run storylines where I make a difference. I'm really relevant. But Henry Nouwen talks to lots of ministers. I think he's Catholic, and he talks to Catholic priests and ministers and speaks to them. And he said, many Christian leaders perceive themselves as having very little impact. I mean, think about what we're talking about, this culture, the speed at which this culture is going, and what this culture values, and how even the dress of women, sorry, on television, how women are, you know, wearing less, mm-hmm. and how they're acting more seductive. It's part of their role they're asked to play. You know what I mean? And how men, maybe I shouldn't pick on the women, how men are being less disciplined, you know, and how it seems to be more about dating than about growing, or always finding, always searching, always looking for someone that's going to be right, never finding right, but just, you know, never growing up, always looking, and the next thrill is the big thing. I mean, in this culture that's sort of getting sicker, how does a minister feel like they're having much impact? If, say, you're in a little church and you just have average, steady attendance, you start to wonder, right? Mm-hmm. Can you imagine how a minister wonders, am I really making much impact in this ever-sickening culture?
Stephen, who you're talking to here? Of course I can imagine that.
No, what are you thinking? Let's hear it. Say it.
I mean, as a leader of a ministry, I can totally imagine how that feels, of feeling like you have very little impact. I feel that a lot, personally. And part of that is because the kind of ministry that we are in is really hard. I mean, dealing with the deepest core issues of sexually broken men, I mean, if people are looking for like a results-oriented, give us your success rate kind of, I mean, good grief, it's pitiful if I look at it from a human perspective and go, oh yeah, we may have a 1% success rate of guys who, you know, 10 years down the road are really still growing and
wait a minute, that sounds a little discouraging.
No,
we know a lot of great success stories here. What I'm starting to get nervous about what you're saying. People are going to go, one out of 99, the other 99 guys these guys work with fail. I mean, what kind of, we're a 1% success rate organization. You better explain that.
Well, if you consider that we have literally millions of people every year that come in contact with our ministry, and then we can consider the handful of guys that, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years from today, of those who contact us, who are you know, coming in contact with our ministry, are still in a growth mode in their lives, growing in the recovery.
And growing in the right direction, getting better, you're saying.
Yeah, okay. I don't find that a discouraging thing, because I'm thinking about those guys that are still growing 3 to 5 years from now. But I'm saying that if you look at it from just a simple, you know, society's perspective, human perspective, whatever, you go, good grief, you have all these, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that come into contact with your ministry through your web resources and podcasts and all this kind of stuff. And you're telling me that the ones that reach out to you, you only have, you know, 1 to 2% of those guys that are. And I say, yeah, because this is hard stuff. And so sometimes I will.
Oh, because lots of guys will start and they won't finish.
And they'll
be
bail
good
out
for a while, or, yeah. And then they'll fall down. And that's some nature of recovery too, is right. It's just not instant, immediate, 100%, right?
And so that's why I can identify with this statement of feeling like you've got very little impact. And I would even say, you know, as I'm looking at that statement, I think about, you know, not even just many Christian leaders perceive themselves as having very little impact.
Oh.
I'd say a lot of men, a lot of people in general, just feel like they're not having much impact. You know, and I think it's due to some of the things that you've been saying. You know, I think about when you were talking about how guys, you know, they're engaged in this and they're sort of wearing down. I heard a thing recently about how one of the fastest ways that you can wear out your battery in like your smartphone.
Yeah.
Is if you have your Wi-Fi constantly on and you're in a place that there's no Wi-Fi. It's like constantly searching. It's continually searching to try to make a connection with Wi-Fi somewhere. And it's like it saps the battery like 5 times faster. And I thought, that's men in America. It's like we're constantly searching. There's these men that you constantly, that's what porn does. It creates this idea that you're constantly searching. And if you're constantly searching, what does that do? It wears down your battery. And so you've got all these tired men that then they look at their lives and they go, I'm not really doing anything of any real significance. I'm not really being an influence in my family or my church. I'm not. And so their batteries are completely worn down because of porn or whatever else. And then they look around and they go, I'm having very little impact. And so I think there's a connection between those two. And I think there's a lot of Christian leaders that it may not be porn, but they are so involved in all, you know, they're stretched too thin in all the various things that they're doing ministry-wise. And then they wonder, why don't I feel like I'm having very much impact? We've got drained batteries in our culture, and there's nothing left to give.
That's a great picture that you painted in terms of searching, searching, doing, doing, busy, busy. But in the end, were you doing all the right things, or were you just being busy doing wrong things? Because his second point, first is discouraged leaders, and then two, he says, look around. There's this undercurrent in our society of despair because loneliness is rampant, isolation, a lack of friendship, intimacy down, broken relationships all around us, feelings of emptiness, people struggling with depression. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if that's always gone on or if we hear more about it, but it's there.
Well, I think every single one of those things are they're not necessarily new, mm-hmm. but I think the rate or the quantity or the frequency of these things seems to be getting greater. You know, I think about that one, especially where it says lack of friendship and intimacy. And immediately I thought of what I call the Facebook fallacy, which is, and that's really social networking in general, is that there's this false idea that people think because they are quote unquote socially connected on these social networks, that they're actually growing deep relationships. And in fact, I would be curious to see if there's ever been a study, but I just, listen, off the cuff, I can tell you, it's not deepening intimacy.
Right.
It's doing just the opposite. It's causing people to actually move further and further away and do more pretending about who they are through social networks rather than actually engaging real relationships. And so it's like we've got all these resources, so to speak, that are meant to try to connect us more. But I think it's doing just this thing where he's saying there's this undercurrent of despair because it has the appearance of friendship, has the appearance of us connecting. But the reality is we're getting more and more isolated. We're lonelier. We're not actually engaging real social interactions. We're engaging fantasy social interactions.
That, and we're a bigger society with more people. We spend more time traveling. We spend more hours at our job, right? So because of that, that makes a lot of sense that we don't have as many friendships that we're building. And people are breaking up because they're not happy, mm-hmm. Feeling empty, those kind of things. Some of these are universals, but he says, put a leader in this culture surrounded by this brokenness, and you can get to a place of despair.
So, and despair, I mean, I guess just to help us understand, I mean, is that just like a sense of hopelessness, of like, what's the point?
Yeah, and the point is not making a difference. I mean, remember, the talk is about being relevant. I want to make a difference. I want to be relevant. I really want to influence a lot of people. I want to make a big splash in this little pond. I want to be known. I'm going to be recognized. And I mean, some of that is like the media, and who do they focus on? And why those people, look, they get all the attention. They're really relevant. They're making a difference. They're big. They're important. But it's interesting what Henry Nouwen says. He says, why don't you just go ahead and admit we're all irrelevant? Why don't you go ahead and be irrelevant? Because this desire to be somebody, to make a big difference, is like part of the problem.
That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I think even what we're talking about with these social networks, I think that's creating more pressure on people. Because like you mentioned previously that, you know, sometimes people look at the the things that other people are doing in their lives, and it creates actually this depression in folks, you know, where it's like, okay, I see all the things that other people are doing that appears like they're making this great impact and they're so relevant, and here I am, you know, piddly nobody that's not doing anything. And it's like we're only exacerbating that attitude of you need to be relevant, and if you aren't, you're a nobody.
Be somebody, make a difference, be recognized. And but you know, there's only so much room for leaders and leadership. The rest of us are workers, mm-hmm. right? And so we want to be that leader. We want to make that difference. We want to be chosen. And he says, maybe this whole thing is insane. Maybe we should recognize that we're small, we're individuals, that we're really not that relevant in relationship to God. Mm-hmm. But he goes on to make an interesting statement. He says, be irrelevant by the standards that we're typically using, but own your own vulnerabilities. Be your own vulnerable self. Allow yourself to be human and have weaknesses, and use that as a starting point. Because look, isn't that what you've done, Jonathan? You took a weakness and made a ministry out of it,
mm-hmm.
right? You could have been out there fighting and scrapping and clawing and wedging your way in to get a title, to be somebody, so that one day you can look up and say, wow, guess what? I make this money with this title. I'm relevant.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting about that is that I've shared this story before with you and maybe even over the air. When we first started the ministry, I had that thought in my mind. Oh man, well if you're gonna have a ministry, I mean, good grief, you've got to be, you know, Dr. Daugherty, or you've got to have some type of credential. You got to be a licensed therapist. So I started looking in all these avenues to get a master's degree and all this kind of stuff. And God closed every single one of those doors. And I have no letters after my name. I am not Dr. Daugherty. And every single time. It's like God was saying, listen, it's not about your relevance. It's not about your credentials. And he wasn't saying I'm anti, you know, God is not anti-education or anything like that. But for me, it was like saying, what is the credential that you have to be able to minister to sexually broken people? And what it always came back to was God's grace, what he did. And so the only credential I needed to be able to minister to sexually broken men was, let me show you what God's grace did in my life.
Wow.
And so it meant that the real relevance was him, not me. And so that's what I like that he says here. Be your own vulnerable self. You don't have anything else to offer other than your weakness anyway. So just be vulnerable with that.
But in this culture, we're supposed to be together and polished and finished and strong and have the answers. And you're saying, use your weakness,
mm-hmm.
because isn't that a God thing? He takes the little things we have, the little offerings, our little brokenness, and he does powerful things.
And here's what I think is so neat about it. It's a counterintuitive thing, and I've seen it happen in my life as well as in the life of so many others, is that when we get the focus right, in other words, when we say, okay, it's not about relevance, about me being relevant. It's about me being faithful. It's about me focusing on what God has me to focus on, which in my case was, hey, tell your story. That was what God wanted me to do to start this ministry. And so as I focused on telling my story, here's the interesting thing. God created a relevance to this ministry.
Wow.
But it wasn't because, oh, I'm out on the charge, man. I'm out on the campaign trail trying to make this ministry relevant. And I think it's interesting how God's economy works. It's like when you get focused on what he wants you to do, he will make things relevant that you couldn't have made relevant yourself anyway. I think about the woman who was in the temple when Jesus called his disciples together to look at her giving her two mites, how she was not making any, I mean, she was giving basically the last of her money. She was putting it in the offering. And Jesus commended her. He said, because listen, all these other people that are making fools of themselves by clanging their money together and doing, he said, they're giving out of their wealth, but she's giving out of her poverty because she put in everything that she had. What was Jesus doing? He was pointing out a woman who was saying, that woman was saying, it's not about me. I'm quietly putting in the very last bit of my money. Mm. And Jesus was doing what? He was making that woman relevant. He was saying, let me show you her. She is not bringing any attention to herself, but I'm going to bring attention to her because she's doing a commendable thing. And so I think it almost has a counter when we decide, listen, I'm going to give up my right to be relevant. And I'm now going to just focus on what I need to focus on. God has a way of then bringing a relevance and pointing out things that you couldn't have pointed out yourself if you wanted to.
Yes. And it's almost like he can shine through the weakness and work his power in the weakness, and you have a testimony in the weakness, right? And there is relevance in that. Not what I did, what I can do, how much I can claw and elbow and poke and jab my way to the top. So he says, no one says, is the question how much you're going to accomplish or how much you love Jesus?
Ouch.
You know,
I mean, that's a deep, deep question.
Is there power really in what you did and what you made happen? Or is the power in being connected to the eternal story?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And is it the greatest thing to glorify yourself or to glorify the name of Jesus?
Well, and how hard is that, right? I mean, when we talk about how we so easily get tangled up in sin, and by the way, I think just so our listeners can know, sin is not simply these acts of, you know, great perversion or, or, you know, obvious sin. You know, we talk about things like murdering and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Did you know that in the Ten Commandments, the first three have to do with the holiness of God? I mean, it's talking about our relationship to God is saying, listen, his name is valuable. His Sabbath is valuable. There is not to be any idols. I mean, idolatry. So it's like there are so many things that, you know, when we even talk about how much are you going to accomplish? I am sinning whenever I begin to make it about me and saying, God, I've got this plan. I'm going to do this. Even if it sounds noble and good and right, if it's all about me, if I'm making it about me, I'm sinning. I'm not expressing my love for Jesus. Because Jesus said, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments, which is another pretty convicting statement.
So when you were talking a minute ago, I was thinking about good and what where good comes from and who's good. Because when someone says to me, you're good, I immediately inside say, no, God, you're good.
Yeah.
And they must be seeing the good in me. And so thank you for that. I mean, they must be seeing you in me.
Right.
Because it's like goodness is not me. God is good. And so I try not to, then I don't have to worry about feeding myself and building me up. Oh, you think I'm good? Oh, that's good. Oh, you don't think I'm good? Oh, no. Oh, no. Please think I'm good. Okay, you think I'm good. I mean, that's just a little crazy making.
Right, yeah.
So when somebody says you're good, I go, no, yes, God is good. And if you see God shining through me, that's a great thing. So that's just an idea I would share because who's relevant, the creation or the creator? You know, who needs to be glorified, the one created or the artist, the creator himself? So, you know, the Bible talks about first love. God first loved us. But then I had this thought myself, then who do we make our second love? And sometimes when our sexuality gets out of control, it's porn and lust and greed and self and ultimately you can work yourself right up to owning the title of sexual addiction. Mm-hmm. But we left our first love. We created a substitute love. And if life is hard and we want to feel good or relevant, well, we'll make up a fantasy. If we can't make it happen, we'll make up a fantasy. And I was even thinking about this. I think some guys will pay women to make them feel good. You know? They'll pay women or manipulate women and use women because they want to feel good and important and special, like they matter. And they'll use, they'll pay for, they'll distort and deceive. so that they can feel good and feel relevant, like they're doing something.
And you know, that's a two-way street, because there are some women who will use men in the same way, sugar daddies, things like that, to make them feel like, see, I've got, you know, look at my appearance has gotten me into this relationship, quote unquote, with this wealthy, powerful man. And so she uses her wiles and ways to manipulate in order for her to feel relevant.
So she can misuse her sexuality,
right,
also, so she feels strong and like she makes a difference. It's interesting, there was a statement about, I'm going to try and remember this, I don't have it exactly right, but a woman feels powerful when she's chosen. But when a man starts looking around at other women, she gets scared, right? Because is that guy going to be faithful? And all that other goofy stuff comes up. And so I just threw that in. That was a thought that popped in. I'm not sure I can make the direct connection to that, but it connects with your whole idea of sometimes women can misuse their sexuality and feel very relevant because they're the chosen ones. But it's only as thin as, if you're not choosing you, what happens then?
Well, and back to this idea of first love, second love, I think, you know what, I think that's a simple way for us to maybe recognize what we're doing in our lives, whether we're trying to make the relevance about us or whether we're trying to make the relevance about God. Because it's saying, hey, listen, if I'm looking at porn, if I'm misusing my sexuality, if I'm making it about greed or power or whatever else, then I'm placing my second love first. Does that make sense?
And, yes.
And so I think it's a quick way for you to be able to say, okay, what am I making the priority? Am I making it what really is the second love, or am I making it what's really the first love? And I don't know, that may just be a quick way for people to say, what am I highlighting as the relevant thing in my life?
Because I think we want to make a difference. We want to be significant. We want to be important. And we want to expend our life well doing things that matter. Because when you get close to death, that's a question that's asked. Did my life matter? Mm-hmm. Did I make a difference? And it's interesting. I want to share this thought that I've had. It is that God has given us the ability to love. Right? He is the great lover himself, and he loves us, and he gave us the ability to love one another. And that's a gift you have that can never be taken from you. You can love. You can smile. You can serve. You can help. You can minister. You can love. That makes you powerful. Satan says, lust well. Mm. You know, lust every time you get a chance, lust after lust, 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 and more lust, and then multiply lust and make it exponential times two lust, and right? Mm-hmm. But that, there's no satisfaction in that. There's no meaning. There's no relevance in that. But to walk in who we're designed to be, great lovers in the truest sense of the word, made by God himself, the great lover, and to practice the skill of loving is to be relevant.
So what's the choice that our listeners have to make then here, Stephen, about relevance?
So you can either pursue it and make it about self, or you can embrace this vulnerability and work on healing and restoration and honesty and insight about what's really going on with you, that you're a human being, you're part of the creation, and being used by the Creator to use your brokenness. And sometimes that this Be Broken ministry name, I go, God, why didn't you call it Be Powerful or Be Wonderful or be so good that, you know, people
be
love
fixed.
You. Yeah, but no, John says Be Broken ministry. So embrace that brokenness and let the light of Christ shine through that broken place.
And I think that's just so important, and you'll find resistance in your being to that, because I think our flesh desires power, desires relevance. We desire to be, you know, the center of attention and all those kind of things. And yet God is asking us to lead with our weakness, lead with that brokenness, not because he says, I want you to remain this broken, you know, pitiful slob or whatever, but because it's in that brokenness, as the Bible says, it's in our weakness that the power of Christ is perfected. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, but I want the power of Christ perfected in my life. And so I'm going to keep leading with my weakness so that he is the relevant one and I am simply a faithful follower. We're glad you've been with us here this week, and we look forward to having you back next week on the Pure Sex Radio broadcast.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.